This is Emergency Medicine Match Advice, sponsored by Academic Life and Emergency Medicine, a podcast series designed to help medical students and residents strategically navigate the process of applying for residency in emergency medicine or to EM-sponsored fellowship programs. I'm your host, Mike Cesani from Stanford University. Let's get started. Welcome to Emergency Medicine Match Advice, sponsored by Academic Life and Emergency Medicine, and its editor-in-chief, your academic Earth Mother, Dr. Michelle Lin from UCSF. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Earth Mother. I'm going to put that on my CV. Thank you.
That's right. There's a lot of definitions of Earth Mother out there, so just pick the ones that you're not offended by. All right, guess what, Michelle?
What?
It is season 5.
What? What is going on?
The beard is gray.
Your hair has a banner in the back.
I know. There's stuff going on. And I'm impressed you just let me keep doing this because it's your business. But here we are.
It's a joy.
Season 5. And we're back with one of our favorite episodes, don't you think?
Absolutely.
This one is Emergency Medicine Program Directors Reflect on last year's match, in this case, the 2018 match. And to do that reflection, we have three amazing program directors with tons of experience and sage advice to offer. Dr. Elise Lovell from Advocate Christ Medical Center.
Welcome, welcome. So happy to be here, Mike.
I know, from my old stomping grounds of Chicago, I'm thrilled you're here. Thanks.
We miss you.
Dr. Leslie Oyama is live from Hawaii. She's in Honolulu, but is the program director at University of California, San Diego. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And I don't know this guy at all. Dr. Jeremy Branzetti, many time zones, back on the East Coast, the program director at NYU Bellevue.
Hello, hello, everyone. Thank you for having me be here with you.
Thanks for joining us. All right. So, Michelle, let's just go right to the data. So we've done this episode a few times in the past. We skipped last season, I think, but we're back with the slide. So for those who are listening on the podcast, I'm going to refer you to a blog post that I wrote for Allium on May 7th, 2018, that has the slide and lots of descriptors about the numbers that you see on the slide. For those who choose to watch this on YouTube or who eventually go compare the audio to the slide, let me just take you from screen left to screen right across the columns and just highlight some of the numbers that I think our panelists are going to reference during their comments and remarks. So you see that we're showing the last 8 years of NRMP, National Residency Matching Program, data and results published in an annual publication from the NRMP that comes out several weeks after the match. And this is a summary of all the most important numbers for our specialty. So last 8 years, in the first column is the number of emergency medicine residency programs, which I'll point out jumped significantly this year. And we'll explain why in a little bit. But because of that jump, there was also a commensurate jump in the number of EM positions offered in the match. What didn't change that much were the number of US seniors, column 4, who applied to emergency medicine. So while most positions filled, those positions weren't necessarily filled by an increased interest in our population of U.S. seniors, which is defined by the NRMP very specifically. They are students in their final year of medical school at allopathic schools in the United States, Canada, and Puerto Rico, or the LCME seniors, as you've heard us talk about on this podcast before. So more programs, more spots. There were not more seniors. And you may have heard in previous iterations of this podcast me describe what I think the most important statistic out of all of the data and results tables offered by the NRMP as a surrogate for competitiveness. And that's what you see in the column listed percent fill rate by LCME seniors. So I think this is a really great surrogate for competitiveness. If you look at what we consider traditionally the most competitive specialties, cardiothoracic surgery, radiation oncology, plastic surgery, vascular surgery, their percent fill rate with US seniors is always in the 90 to 100% range. They're always in the 90s. Emergency medicine has never been in the 90s, but we pretty consistently were right around 80% or just under 80% in line with OBGYN and general surgery, and far different than internal medicine, family medicine, and pediatrics, putting us in this group of what I would call moderately competitive specialties. We certainly are amongst our plastic surgery, vascular surgery, very competitive colleagues, but we were sort of moderately competitive. And you'll notice this year, because of more programs, more positions, less US seniors, that percent fill rate went down. So that's going to be the clue to our panelists about the question, was it more competitive, less competitive, did it stay the same? I don't know. We have to interpret that number. Did that number drop just in a way that's numerically interesting, or did it really have significance on the ground for the folks applying to our specialty? It certainly didn't result in any additional positions available in the SOAP. You see that only 10 positions were available this year in the supplemental offer and acceptance period, or SOAP, previously called the scramble. And we can take away that the SOAP is not a viable method of getting into emergency medicine, and it hasn't been for many, many years. It also really didn't change dramatically the number of unmatched either US seniors or independent applicants, being the osteopathic graduates, folks who had already graduated from a US allopathic school and were coming back either for additional training or didn't match in the past, so they weren't considered a senior, or international medical grads. You see that the number of unmatched students in both of those columns remain pretty similar. So with that, let's get on to our panelists and have them interpret some of these numbers and what their importance are, if at all. So our first panelist is Dr. Elise Lovell from Chicago. All right, Elise, I want you to answer the question. Let's start us out. Was it a more competitive year, a less competitive year, or did it stay the same?
Yeah, so I think, Mike, I'm going to double down and say about the same. And I think that you've already given a really great sort of data-driven explanation for that. I think that what we're seeing is that there are definitely more positions open this year, as well as a number of more programs opened up in the last year or two. And, you know, going to the single accreditation system, you know, we're seeing this large influx in the number of new programs out there. And again, a lot of those are due to osteopathic programs becoming ACGME accredited. But we still have even more programs that are just opening up. I mean, locally here in Chicago, we welcomed Rush in 2017. And now it looks like we're going to have yet another program, Loyola, welcoming students during this season. So, you know, we're seeing this effect locally with other new programs opening up. And then again, with the accreditation, single accreditation system, many of these osteopathic programs now achieving ACGME accreditation status. And you know, that's not going to last forever as that window closes on the single accreditation system in 2020, you know, that will slow down. But right now, I think it's better than ever for students who are interested in emergency medicine to, you know, to get out there and apply. And so you might say, okay, well, then maybe it's just even just less competitive. But I still feel like, you know, we see so many students, you know, on an anecdotal basis coming through who are so excited about emergency medicine. Our applications are, you know, the numbers are as robust as ever. And in fact, if, you know, we'll hear from the rest of the group here, but we're receiving more applications every year. So I feel like there's still that element of desirability about our specialty. And certainly that feeling of, wow, this is such a great way to practice medicine, is such a great way to be, you know, engaged with patients and to have still a, you know, a life that's sort of balanced, that the competitive, I think, nature of this somewhat evens out. And we say, and so again, I'll call it sort of a wash and say that it's about the same as last, you know, year or two.
So a couple of remarks. First, you referenced my alma mater, your final four Loyola University Chicago Ramblers, finally entering the world of residency training. I'm excited to see that program come out onto the scene. So congratulations to my alma mater. Congrats, Loyola. But you did reference the single accreditation system. You kind of defined it, but just to be very specific for the students who may not be down with program director lingo, single accreditation is a several-year process in which programs which were previously osteopathic programs, meaning they were accredited by the American Osteopathic Association, several-year process where those programs are now reapplying now for accreditation, or initially applying for accreditation as ACGME programs, which is traditionally the allopathic way of accrediting residency programs, such that eventually the AOA accreditation will go away and there will be a single pathway, a single accreditation opportunity for an institution who wants to have a training program. So those AOA programs have a choice. They can close their program, or they can apply for ACGME accreditation, of which that group, some of them have made it in, some of them have been sent back to the drawing board, and some of them have been denied. And then those programs will eventually graduate out their classes and close. So what we're seeing is that we're in the middle of this process and a big influx of these programs are coming over to ACGME. So for the next couple of years, that number of programs will tick up. But there was also a lot of other allopathic programs coming onto the scene. I think we're seeing many more institutions that were traditionally non-teaching hospitals sponsoring training programs. So that number is moving for two reasons, and it's going to continue to always go up, I think. The number of hospitals out there that could, you know, substantively train an emergency medicine resident is great, and certainly far more than the number of current programs. But we're going to see that number rise, but not due just to single accreditation. So you feel that from your experience this past year, that there were just more applications.
Yes.
But not more seniors.
No, you know, it's sort of hard to say exactly, you know, the proportions and all, you know, because you just see this huge influx of, you know, of applications. But certainly, I felt like the seniors, the U.S. seniors, about the same. And definitely, you know, we had, I'm going to say that we probably had somewhat more seniors than in past years, but not significantly. And then just overall an influx, you know, more of an influx of the osteopathic students and the international, you know, medical graduates as well. And just in general, then, you know, that the total number ended up being higher than it has been the last couple of years.
Hey, Elise, can I break in for a sec? Because I don't know of any person who doesn't want sage advice from Elise. So I just want to ask a practical question of you. Moving forward, you know, you have a ton of advisees, medical students. And now that you're saying the competitiveness is about the same, but there's a lot of literature coming in about burnout and emergency medicine. That's a big factor factoring in. There's a lot of confounders. So like moving forward, what do you advise your students on number of programs to apply to, for instance, given all of these different metrics that are out there?
Yeah, so I think that the big thing about applying is not just sort of doing the across the board, you know, apply to everything and every place, but just to be selective. And the AAMC talks about it as applying smart. And in fact, they have a really nice program on their website all about, you know, applying smart. Lots of advice there, and even gets so granular as to give you specialty specific graphs that will talk about things like your step one score is such and such. What is your sort of optimum predicted number of programs to apply to? And when do you actually fall off the curve and it's not quite so useful? So I think that what I tell my students is, you know, don't be a shotgunner about this. Really what it is use the resources out there, especially use your EM advisor, but EMRA, all of the wonderful resources that they have, not only EMRA Match, but their advising resources, the CORD Student Advising Task Force, which has EMRA and CDEM wrapped up in it. They have a ton of resources. And really, students can go easily to the EMRA website and find all of these different, you know, resources available to them. And that's what I'm telling my students is, you know, you have to get good advice, because everybody is a little bit different. And based on your scores, based on your, you know, your time in medical school, based on what your advisor tells you, that number's gonna be different for everybody. But universally, what we're finding is that if you can get 12 solid interviews, that in general, your chance of matching an emergency medicine, unless there's some weird outlier, you know, sort of factor in your specific application, you get those 12 interviews, you're going to be able to match. And so it's just a matter of making sure you're doing this in a smart way. You can have a couple of reach programs, you can have some really safe programs, but just work to get towards that, you know, that 12 interviews.
Yeah, I loved Diane Ripple, the program director at New Mexico, in this episode a couple of years ago, talks about that graph where you say it sort of flattens out. And she was like, so it's 11 where it reaches the asymptote. So I just say asymptote plus one, which I think is really like exactly what should happen. All right. Well, thanks. So let's move on to our next panelist. And Dr. Yama, I'm curious first what you think of Elise's characterization. What do you think? Was it the same as last year? What do you see in the numbers?
Well, I do have a disclaimer. This was my first year as program director, but I have been involved as APD for several years and part of the application process. So I think being at the steering wheel this time, I don't know that I have years and years to reflect upon, but I do think comparatively, it is about the same as far as competitiveness. And what isn't the same is the number of applicants that has gone up every single year since I've been doing this for the last 6 years. And the numbers all seem to be going up. And I'm not sure how everybody's getting so darn smart. But numerically, it sure seems like from that objective point of view, grades, board scores, or step scores, rather, are certainly on the rise. Other observations, I would say the number of cancellations that occurred for interviews that had been scheduled went down for us this year, which is great because that's always problematic when you have to fill spots at the last minute. But I would definitely agree that her experience is very similar to ours.
Yeah, just a quick yes, no. Elise, Jeremy, did your cancellation numbers go down as well?
They were actually down. We had fewer cancellations. Yep.
This year for us, I think it was right around the same. Again, similar caveat to what Leslie has, a new program director at my site. So I was digging up some of the old data and it looks roughly about the same, but it wasn't compared to other institutions where I've been, it was less overall to those years.
You know, I think it's interesting, by the way, world, all three of these panelists are very experienced and had been APDs for many, many years. And then they're all fairly new in their program director roles within the last 1 to 2 years. So you're all sort of in that same group. But I think it's still sage wisdom to be offered. So I disagree with you on that, Leslie. So, you know, if we're going to look at these numbers, though, and we're going to try to say that, you know, this is the WMC saying apply smart. For us, perhaps it's saying apply in an evidence-based manner, right? You're looking at the data tables. What takeaways can we have? I think if the U.S. senior number stayed so remarkably stable, there were a total of 5 additional U.S. seniors across the entire country last year. There's no reason that the application number should be going up, but it continues to go up, 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 up each year. So maybe the first takeaway is simply to stop over applying. At least ask the folks last year how many they applied to, and don't apply to more.
I also think that part of that has to be the advice that they're receiving. Because, you know, when we talk to students, sometimes, especially during that interview time, and we'll ask around the table, you know, what was your advice as far as how many applications you should put out or how many interviews you should go on? The numbers are extraordinarily high. So yeah. I think, again, it comes back to, you know, where are you getting your advice from? And is your advisor an emergency medicine person? And are they actually sort of up to speed on some of these recommendations that are out there through organizations, you know, like EMRA and CDEM and all of this?
Well, right. Because if you're seeing more applications per program, right, the average applicant, therefore, is probably putting out more applications than they did a couple of years ago, you'd expect that your cancellation rate would go up, but it's not. In fact, if it stays the same or goes down, that means more students are going on more interviews.
Yep.
More right. students are going on more interviews. Maybe not more students are going on more interviews, just the students are going on more interviews. So it speaks to both of these issues, right? They're over-applying and over-interviewing, and there's got to be a point at which we just say stop. Yeah. All right, Leslie, so we've talked enough about 2018. Let's turn our attention to 2019. What, if anything, will be new in the 2019 match?
Well, what will be continuing are these standard videos that I'm sure the students are aware of. And having spoken to many students about this and interviewees about it, I'm not sure what they understand or think is the value in it and might be kind of a pain to do. And from my point of view, it was very, very interesting because what I would do is I would actually listen to their videos as I read their applications. So it was kind of like my own little podcast on them. And then there were other little nuances too of, you know, how they presented themselves and their professionalism and things that are harder to get out of an application. So that was useful to me as far as what was new last year, and that will continue this year as well. I don't know what everybody else's experience was or how they utilizes the videos.
I think that's a brilliant idea. I really like that idea of the sort of the multi-source input of the you're reading their application and you get a little bit of their feel for who they are through the SVI.
Dual processing, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you use it though, Jeremy?
To be perfectly honest, I didn't use it too much this year. In the context of not having a definitive role to what it really does and not knowing what it's having had prior experience with it, not knowing exactly what is going to be the difference of a score of 16 versus 18. Sure, there's a graph that shows a standard deviation and how that separates out, but it's really not quite shown yet what that translates into the candidate who's going to be in front of me. So I took more of the cautious approach to be able to hold off and say, well, let's stick with the things I'm more familiar with and, you know, the classic interview, and well, let's see how this develops with the SVI.
So just to be clear, there's the videos and there's people that rated the videos too, which offered a numeric score. I'm not sure if the applicants understood that. So for me, I didn't pay any mind to what the numeric score of whoever reviewed their videos was. For me, I'm like, my opinion's more important to me than somebody else's opinion. So I didn't pay attention to the numbers. I just listened to the videos as I read their applications and just de novo took my input that way.
Yeah, that's an interesting caveat. That's important. Elise, how did you use the SVI?
We took a look at all of our students who had rotated with us and did that comparison of what do we think the scores would be versus how do the raters view the students. And certainly our concern was there was a fair amount of disconnect, and we would trust what we thought as far as the students who rotated with us for a month and how they did. We'd of course trust that over the standard, you know, rater score. So we had already set up some concern about validity internally for us. And so what we ended up doing in general was, if the scores were sort of in that middle range, and you sort of refer to that, you know, I don't know what the difference was between a 16 or 18 either. So we just sort of, that didn't really matter to us. When there was a big discordant between, for example, a paperwork score of the application and what we were thinking the applicant sort of merited as far as bringing them in for an interview or not, if that was really far off from what the SVI score was, you know, we'd listen to the, you know, to the actual, the podcast, and we'd make our own decision and see if we could sort of match that up. But it was really only in these outlier situations where we took a second look or listened to the, you know, the actual recording and looked at the actual tape ourselves. So yeah, our overall use of it was very limited, and it was mostly because of this disconnect between what we found between our rate, between our rotators who came through and actually did a month with us, and where we really trusted what we thought of that experience and some of the scores that just didn't seem to match up for those students.
Well, I'm curious, actually, for the panelists, knowing what you know now and how you individually applied it to your program, and then knowing who you matched and how much time you invested in scoring things and listened to it in the background, would you do anything differently for next year? Because I can imagine it takes some time to listen to all these things, I imagine. Would you change anything? Are you going to keep the same process?
I'll say for me going into it, I don't currently plan to change that process. As you said, Michelle, it's a lot of time and effort to go through that. Not that the effort isn't worth it, but you have so many other data points to do. And frankly, let's call it out, interviewing and recruitment is an imperfect process. Each thing, each data point is imperfect in how you interpret it. And I think what maybe one of the key points from a program director side is, you develop the areas with which you feel most familiar and feel you know the most comfortable with interpreting. And right now, I don't have that sense of development for the SVI. I've heard some great ideas. I think Leslie's point of what she had mentioned was a wonderful way to use that. And other folks have used it maybe from the PD side when you're constructing a rank list. It's, well, maybe this is how I figure out the people who are in this sort of, if all things being equal, ... position. So I think there are wonderful possible options for that. And I certainly would consider them as I hear them, but I'm not quite sure how to definitively incorporate into my process this year.
So every applicant gets asked different questions. They don't all get asked the same questions. So from one applicant to the next, they may not have, I chose essentially three questions that I really enjoyed hearing their answers on. So depending upon what answers they were asked, I'm like, oh, there's my question. So I consistently looked for the same question amongst all the applicants. And so I didn't listen to every single, that would have taken a long time. But that was my soundtrack. And I do intend to use that again this year because it was useful and somewhat entertaining. So that's how I'm planning to go with it.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably do the same as we did last year as well. You know, we'll put more weight into actually candidates that we know. But if there are candidates that we don't know who haven't rotated with us, and especially if we're on the fence about whether or not to bring them in for an interview, and their SVI score is, again, outlying in either direction, we'll take the extra time to look at their SVI video, to listen to them actually speak, to actually, you know, give them that, you know, that few minutes. And then maybe that will help weigh in on whether or not we invite them in for an interview. And mostly, quite honestly, I want to use it as a way to bring in people who I might otherwise have let go and not brought in. And so if I can look at their SVI and I'm like, wow, you know, that was a really wonderful moment of professionalism or communication skills, you know, I want to try to use that to help maybe bring those few people in and give them a chance in person.
Yeah, I don't want to be off too far on a tangent for the SVI, though. It seems like every time the SVI comes up, we all go off on a tangent. You know, just for the students, I'd refer you back to our 2017 episode about the SVI in terms of where we are in the timeline. I think you're hearing, I didn't use it all that much, and I'm not really going to change my process because we're in a multi-year pilot where there's first evidence of bias or no bias, really wasn't that biased, if at all, in terms of the raters. And now we're in an area where we're trying to find correlation with other parts of the application or some other confirmation of validity. And until that happens, we probably won't see the program directors changing their normal process and routines all that much until that evidence is available, at least another year away, maybe two. So I think the jury's still out And if you're going to do anything differently based on this conversation, say, shout out to Dr. Yama at the beginning of every set of answers. And she'll be like, yes, as she's typing away on her computer. Leslie, anything else new coming up next year? I know we kind of got off on a tangent.
New, not on the top of my mind now.
All right. Awesome. Dr. Branzetti, listening to those first two portions of our discussion, what, if any, messages really are the most important to walk away with?
It's a fantastic role to be able to be the third one to go, because then it can reinforce and seem like the smart person, that the armchair quarterback. But a couple of points really stood out to me. I think while there may be debate in how you interpret what your blog post article about the application data in emergency medicine is, important points include not only are there more programs, not only the data point of seniors is possibly going to have to be rethought now, because why would you select one group, allopathic versus osteopathic, when you're going to have a consistent application system? And the point being, you're going to have more programs that were formerly osteopathic that are in the single accreditation, but you're also going to have more applicants that will come into that from the osteopathic side. And they're going to be much like the allopathic applicants, grade applicants, middle of the pack applicants, and lower applicants. And that's going to impact how this gets looked at. So I think the takeaway is it's pretty hard to have a definitive conclusion, but my gut feel is it was about as competitive in the last year. But the real points I think that stand out were the importance of taking and receiving advice from mentors in emergency medicine who are in the know. I think the broad swing of applications that we see many students taking comes from well-intending medical schools and well-intending medical school staff who are not necessarily in emergency medicine and will give an advice that's on the more cautious side, because frankly, they're not the ones paying for the $30 per application or whatever the fee is now. And it's better to be cautious and have too many than too little. But if everybody takes that mindset, we really run into a significant resource allocation issue here. And I think we're getting to that point in the application cycle. So my experience both at here and when I was in APD was, it's not that there's that many more applicants, there's just more applications, and each applicant is sending more. So maybe one of the ways to help fix that is going to be finding or the more consistent advice from us. But I think that's really a great open topic in the world of emergency medicine. And I'd be, of course, curious to know how folks feel about how might we make that better going into the future.
All right. So let's just do a numbers only answer. Average applicant, make sure the average applicant in your brain, how many applications do they submit? How many interviews do they go on? We'll start with Elise. How many applications do they submit?
30, 25.
How many interviews?
Again, if they get a dozen and they're average, I think they're fine.
Okay. Leslie.
Minimum 20 to apply. And then in all honesty, I would say if they have a good advisor saying, here's your reach schools, here's your solid schools, here's your safety schools, 12.
Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm with my co-panelists here for roughly the number of interviews, anywhere from the 10 to 12. Let's just say it straight out. In the absence of some terrible thing that happens during an interview or otherwise, if you are an average applicant and you are going to match into emergency medicine.
Absolutely.
That's the key thing to really remember. It will happen. You don't have to have this fear that there's not enough for you. It will happen. So you don't need to have that many applications. And so maybe the big difference is, you know, we're going to spitball here, 25, 30. Just as important, I think, is to be watching astutely to the number of interviews you're getting and responsibly manage the number. Because once you really start getting that 10, 12, et cetera, you can really winnow down the ones that you were maybe applying to because out of more fear rather than a genuine desire to be there.
So what you're not hearing, students, is 15 interviews, 20 interviews. What you're not hearing is 40, 50, 60 applications. If you have a trusted advisor who knows what they're doing and can honestly assess your application and say, yeah, you're a solid applicant. You're an average applicant, solid applicants match to our specialty. We are a moderately competitive specialty. If they can give you that characterization and trust them, then don't over-apply. I mean, we talk about this every year on these podcasts, that the number of applications are going up, but we have to call enough is enough.
Hey, Mike, what do you think about this? Like, I love numbers, like you just said. And why don't we just create, I feel like we need like an EM match formula, which is, let's say you are not an emergency medicine faculty, minus 10 on number of programs, whatever they said, minus 10.
Boom. And,
right?
What? Wait. In season five.
There is a corollary.
Wait, here we go. Here we go. Factor. I'm so excited.
It's a factor correction, right? Here we go. Whatever they said, minus 10. And then if they're in emergency medicine, for every degree of seniority they have outside of the clinical director, APD, PD bubble, minus 5, right? So you have like chair, Dean. That Dean gets minus 10, right? Because they're like outside, up, they're way up there.
Yeah.
So, they're right, out of the loop.
We can create like a formula.
This is going to be outstanding. Hey, listen, you guys can go home. Michelle and I are going to start to iterate this a bit. We don't need you anymore. Michelle, the next thing is like, what state do they come from?
Oh, yes.
Quartile rank. Is their school at U.S. News and World Reports? We're going to divide by. We're ready to go.
Yeah. Putting like a square root in there. Why not?
For sure. No. What is the integrals? I didn't do well in calculus. Yeah. Not that thing. Everything else can appear. I know all the rest of the maths.
It sounds like the Lin-Jasanti formula is going to be in maybe 10 years up for the Nobel Prize in Economics. I'm just saying.
She's so annoyed that you hyphenated it, but I love that you did.
As long as I'm first, I'm good.
Well, I just want to point that out. Yet again, I put Mike second on the hyphenation front.
That's all right. I'm okay with that. Nobody wants Jasanti going first. Hey, panelists, what else do we have to say about this? Anything? Any other points you wanted to make about?
I have a point that I would like to make based upon some sage advice I got from my program director by the name of Jasanti.
Yeah.
So for me, as a new APD or a new PD, I was trying to figure out how am I going to manage all of these applications that come in. And he very wisely said, you know, you got to have deadlines. And after this deadline, no more new things that you're going to be looking at. Because honestly, applications keep coming in December, sometimes even January, which we interview through January because we can, but you know, it's sunny, we don't have weather issues. But you know, that was something that struck me. I'm like, oh, I kept on looking and looking and looking. And then Mike said, you know, you might want to set a deadline for like, nope, this is your stop date.
Yeah.
So nobody, I think it's important. So that I think was a really sage piece of advice from you for sure.
Oh, well,
and that helped make my life a little bit better as well. But the applicants should know that, right? And that, oh gosh, you know, if they say on their website that November 1 is a deadline, they're not going to look at anything received after that. They better be on point as far as submitting their applications. And so paying attention to those things is really useful. And as a tip, it might be useful for an applicant to think of it from our point of view too, right? So consider your reader maybe in that if there's an update to your application, do you need to send an email every time to me or my program coordinator? Because we actually get notifications and errors about things like that. I received over 300 emails of that nature of just want to let you know I've got an update, which to me seemed like double work because I get notified anyway. And that was filling up my email box and filling up my voicemail box. And who needs more of that? I appreciate, you know, the interest and the desire to be like, hey, I just want to make sure you're up to date, which I appreciate and would appreciate as a boss. But when you're dealing with so many applications, you kind of got to think of the reader or the person on the other side of going through all these things. So that would be a piece of advice perhaps in trying to deal with all this and going forward.
Yeah, well, I love that you unpack to the behind the scene mechanics of what it means to get those emails. And I get it. I mean, the students are trying to do their best. They're putting their best foot forward. They are super excited about their 250 something board score and they want to share that wonderful news with you. I get that. But it does in total really result in a lot of work. And the deadline thing, I think also, if you look at it from our perspective, they're going to have deadlines in residency. And if they can't meet the deadline during application season, are they ever going to meet your deadlines for paperwork and other just normal tasks of being a professional that you're going to have to deal with for 4 years? And that's a bad sign. So they have to have a really good reason, a late switch or something, to be calling you up after a deadline. I think that's important. What other tips and tricks? This is good. We're going to close on this sort of topic, perhaps.
So, I mean, not to grouse, but another piece of maybe sage advice for the students is if you're going to do any contacting of program directors, I definitely advise that it be something that's specific and special and not just that, you know, general, hey, I got more information for you. But the piece of advice that I do or the piece of information I like receiving is the information that really sets them apart as having specific interest in my program. And so this is really important as we're being deluged with 1,000+ applications every year. If you want to come to Chicago, if you want to check out this specific program in a specific geographic area, let the program director know, you know, why that is. So not these generic, I have more information for you, or I'm just interested in general, but be specific about what it is that you actually are excited about for that program. I think that resonates and helps me winnow out some of these applications.
Yeah, I completely agree with my my sagacious colleagues here in that you can read it. It's almost like the Turing test. You can tell an email that is basically copy paste that you've been sending to every program director. And I realize that. And it's, you get that sense of like, well, that clearly didn't mean anything for me. And we're all humans, right? The appeal to something about me and my program matters. It will strike a chord beyond just in the emotional sense. And as Elise noted, being able to note something about the program that shows that it matters to you, because back to what we spoke about before, when you have a certain number of programs you're applying to, when there's enough applications and a number you have to go through, ultimately you really want to be focusing on the ones that you're really motivated about and not the ones that you're casually applying to. And being able to write an email in a way that describes that you understand the program and say something that really appeals to you, and also I'll add on in a professional way, matters and will help. It may not fix everything. It may not be something that's an opening to every door, but it can definitely help out.
Michelle, take us home. This is the season premiere of season 5. What do you want to say in sort of summary of what you've heard today?
Yeah, no, thanks. I'm still processing all of this, which it sounds like it's a similar competitive year, despite the numbers fluxing and it's hard to figure out how they all come together. But I am intrigued by the idea of, are we becoming less competitive potentially?
Right. Yes.
I mean, is no one else kind of bothered by the fact that we went from 80% to 70%, a huge drop in just this 1 year of number, a percent of EM positions filled by LCME US seniors? And every other year, it's like 79, 80, 81, 78, boom, 70. What is going on? And so I'm intrigued to see if, like, maybe sometime down the road, maybe in the near future, do we advise people to apply to only 15 programs? Do I mean, like, that would be an interesting thought. Anyway, I look forward to hearing these trends. I love hearing the insights from everybody on the panel. I'm going to work out this correction factor formula a little more, and I'll get back to you guys on that.
Oh, my God. I love the level of nerd that we are. It's off the charts, off the charts. All right. So, panelists, hey, thanks for such awesome sage wisdom. As a thank you, I want to give you the opportunity to pitch your program to the world, but you have to do it in a very specific manner. And our longtime listeners know exactly what that is. It's tell me something I don't know about your residency program. And I kind of know a lot about all three of them.
And so this is my favorite part.
I know. Yay! Yeah, we get a little look to ourselves. Yes. So yeah, you gotta knock my socks off here with some insider information. And I'll take dirt and rumors and gossip too. Like, I'm all for that. So let's start with our friends from Oak Lawn, Illinois. They were just to the south of me for 14 years. And I've always thought so highly of Elise and her team. So tell me something I don't know about Advocate Christ Medical Center.
Yeah, I would go with, first of all, Oak Lawn is still Chicago, everyone. So yes, you can live downtown and you can work, be at our program. And I live downtown and I still have a really, actually not too bad commute out to Oak Lawn. So that would be number one of three. Number two would be that we are a one-stop shop. So we don't send our residents out to multiple places. And I think people have pros and cons ideas about that, but we like it because we feel that it breeds a real culture of support and trust. And we're all in this together. We're all under the same roof. So that's something that for us, I think works really well and we enjoy it. And the third would be that we have a one-on-one faculty resident teaching model clinically in our emergency department. So if you come and you work a shift, you're going to be paired up with a faculty member, you're going to present to them. And so I think that's unusual and we really love it. We've had a lot of resources thrown our way to be able to support that. And so there's a lot of one-on-one, clinical teaching, from that individual faculty member. So that'd be my top three.
All right. That's awesome. Students, I've always enjoyed the emergency medicine community of Chicago. There's now 7, soon to be 8 programs, but they're all so different. And for a city of that size with such awesome sports teams and reasons to live there, there's not too many programs, right? So there's something for everybody. And I've always said that Christ has some amazing things to offer. One being, while they all have strengths and weaknesses, you guys have one of the very best, if not the best, case mix in the city. And I agree with you, the one-stop shop can be done there because of really an amazing mix of patients culturally and in terms of diversity, in terms of complexity. And then I think your faculty ratio has always been one to be envied by some of the other programs, which just simply can't staff in that same way. You have a new shiny ER and trauma center, and it's just a great place to live and work. So students, definitely check out Advocate Christ Medical Center and our friends on the south side. All right, well, let's turn our attention west to sunny San Diego. where we had an underground pipeline that was dug out where the students from Northwestern could just go. It was never bi-directional, people. It was a rare thing for the San Diego students to come to snowy Chicago. But we loved sending our students to the folks at San Diego and thought very highly of your program. So tell me something I don't know then about UC San Diego.
Well, that's a tall order, but just from the bottom up, we're a 1-4 program in California, southern San Diego. With that, we have probably, I would say, smorgasbord. Maybe that's a good point. So we have over 9 fellowships that are offered. Well, what do I care about fellowships? I'm going for residency. Well, the point is that while you're in residency, you can explore fellowships and understand what all these different specialties mean. Or if you even want to spend the extra time, maybe be able to achieve that in your 4 years of residency. So there's a lot of expertise around, which creates for a really rich academic environment and a lot of hybridization of cool research too. But beyond that, you know, there's also on this smorgasbord buffet table, we go from rural medicine all the way to academia medicine and a flight program, a helicopter mercy air program as well. So you're really going to have a lot of opportunities to explore just about anything you want in San Diego and the time in a 4-year program to do so in an adequate way. And I think the third point would probably be you're more than a number to us. So I know there's going to be the Lynn Jazani formula, but we do definitely take into account the whole person here and making sure that we're looking at all the different points of your application and all the points of who you are when you're with us and fostering that resilience. We have a family model here. So you'll definitely have a just add water or seawater instant family.
Well, I really give you guys so much credit. I thought my old job, I got to interact with the students from Feinberg quite closely and was really happy to see as many of them match over the years. And they were some of my very favorite students to work with as well. So say hello to all of them for me. They all seem so happy and they're thriving there. And that can only be because of all the great things that you guys are doing. And I think students, you're paying attention. ASAP is in San Diego in October.
That's correct, yes.
So you should all apply to San Diego. Watch your application numbers go through the roof. You should all apply there. You should go to ASAP. You can check out San Diego if you've never been there before and decide, you know, is this the right place for you? You have a couple trips. So definitely check out UC San Diego. And finally, this guy, Jeremy Branzetti, I barely know you. Tell me stuff that's new and different going on at a historic program, Bellevue NYU.
Well, let's take the pitch part of that first. So that's right. We're NYU Bellevue here, and our program started and is still the heart and soul of which is Bellevue, America's oldest public health hospital. And that is the soul of what our program would be when I like to talk about it. In working in a hospital that seeks to take care of really the who's who that a for-profit hospital wouldn't want to care for, that's us. That's what we aim for. And we live and breathe social emergency medicine, healthcare disparities, to the point where that's our research staff looking into harm reduction and homelessness and addiction care services through the care that we deliver in the ER. That alone, I believe, doesn't make the complete physician. And what we really aim into then is to complement that with our university site, NYU Hospital Lingo Medical Center, TISH, long name. And I'm really excited to talk about our newer hospital that joined our system, formerly known as Lutheran, but now NYU Lingo in Brooklyn. You get to catch and hear that name getting out there. That's going to be our community site. And I think the three of them put together really give you a wonderful, complete experience of training here in New York. And we're New York. Let me give my emotion here. We're New York. Well, I don't got to sell New York. That's what we are. But as the gossip, actually, the city's gotten together and we're going to be America's nicest city next year. We've all agreed on it. So you should all come out and see that. We're not going to be jaywalking. We're not going to be yelling at people who step in front of us. We're going to hold doors open all the time and not shove you out of the subway. It's going to be amazing.
There's so much to unpack there. All right. So students, first of all, I've actually been in all three of those ERs that you've mentioned. And not to be overlooked, that Brooklyn site is an awesome site with a lot of complex patients that are very different still than TISH and Bellevue. So you have a really wonderful place with those three sites and certainly a broad faculty, lots of interests, and a program that I really hold in very, very high regard. And despite the accent, and I'm from upstate New York and forget about it. I get that. Right. So students, definitely check out the old and storied and wonderful NYU Bellevue. So thanks you guys. Good luck to the students who are getting ready for application season, and look for some more episodes of EM Match Advice later this summer. Thanks, panelists.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Emergency Medicine Match Advice. You can view any of our episodes for free on Allium's YouTube channel, or if you prefer, listen to the episodes as Allium podcasts on SoundCloud.
Also, check out summaries of our episodes as blog posts on Allium.com and in the publication A User's Guide to the Allium EM Match Advice Series in the June 2017 issue of the Western Journal of Emergency Medicine. We love to hear from our listeners. Post your questions or comments for any of our episodes on Allium.com. Thanks for joining us.